Well, good morning, everyone, here from the Little Bear Meditation Center in Finland, north of the Arctic Circle, about 6 degrees or so, almost 70 degrees north. And we're getting what they promised in the Arctic. We have a really big storm swirling around us with high winds and blowing snow. I can't even see out the window. I hope to clear some visibility. Tuya and I have been helping to celebrate the 100th year of Finland as a nation state. And some of you have tuned in with us on our meditation service for that. It's a Capricorn country, and the only Capricorn soul country that DK gives thus far. A lot more countries have, of course, appeared since he gave out those rays and astrological signs. A very strong seventh ray, and also a very deep second ray on some level. Everything was lit up blue. The colors here in Finland are blue and white. That's the colors in the flag, and symbolically they mean quite a bit. The mountain here is a sacred mountain. It was once very, very tall. Now it's, it shrunk some, let's put it like that, but it's still a very evident sacred spot, and it was lit up in a very bluish purple for 3 days. It was a wonderful sight to behold, and people came from all over to celebrate this moment. You know that HBB told quite a bit about the value of the Finnish epic, the Kalevala, and it really was transmitted via song, of all things. There was an old man, 95 years old. He somehow had memorized just hours and hours and hours of this ancient singing to transmit the myth, and the musicologists did everything they could to record him before he passed on. Of course, he was 95, maybe 15 years ago. I'm not sure what his fate is at the moment, but they did have something very, very valuable, and HBB said that a lot of wisdom would come from this Kalevala, a lot of the occult truths, and a great light would come forth from this nation, which is has a people really that is I would say part of the seventh subrace of the fourth root race, at least in terms of the history. So it's been quite an intense time here. The weather was beautiful for that, but as soon as that Independence Day passed and the 100th anniversary, in came the storm. So maybe somebody was watching out for these celebrations. Well, tonight we have yes, okay, dear. Tuya is coming with something hot for me to drink. You know, I never seem to be able to come up here, but something gets in my throat. But I'm quite a bit better now. Anyway, we have today a reading from Master DK, which is one of the most inspiring readings. You know, every once in a while he really speaks to the aspirational nature and to the power of encouragement, and I think we'll see that. We've been studying the factor of fear, and it's the greatest, maybe it's the greatest glamour on our whole planet, and it's inherited from previous systems, from the moon chain, and even from the previous major solar system. It's inherent in matter itself, this recoil from further opportunity. And then he goes on and he seems to be telling us what we can do and what our attitude should be. Not just the techniques, which are wonderful, but how we should approach our life as aspirants and disciples. And you know, it has a tremendously uplifting effect, at least in my view. So let's see, let's for a few moments let us just think of ourselves together, scattered as we are all over the world in different times, apparently, and yet at the same time. And we are offering ourselves as an instrument to help clarify a situation on the astral plane about which, which both Alice Bailey and Master DK have a certain horror, as it is said. So it's a severe situation. Every once in a while, I will appear to disappear, and it just means that I have to go with the process of this cold and do some coughing, which I'm sparing you, hopefully. So we're working together, offering ourselves over the weeks and months and even years. You know, it's not going to be immediately solved, but it has to be attacked. And we see how perilous is the human situation at the moment, due to the glamour of egotism and selfishness, all kinds of misperceptions based upon the actions of people of very limited consciousness. So we have to work very hard on the inside in a daily way with triangles and weekly for the reappearance of the Christ and for the attraction of resources for hierarchical purposes and to evoke the soul of the nation in which we find ourselves and generally the world soul. And of course, this big problem of glamour and illusion. Now, I'd like to get into this wonderful reading. I think I was going over it, you know, and those of us who have read a treatise on white magic and maybe read it more than once and studied certain sections repeatedly realize what a wonderful manual it is, what a wonderful book, companion book this is, to all those who are disciples and to all those who are attempting to control the astral body. Last time when we were doing this, we read about the idea that high vibrations can have an effect which is not immediately high because they can evoke the evil, that's what we call it, the evil that is within us. And how do we deal with this? This heightening of vibration, you know, there may be bodily fatigue, and he says we do have to have a change of vibration. Master Moria tells us that rest is a change of labor. Interesting. And DK seems to be going along with that, you know. The bodily fatigue is not so much overcome by sleep and by rest, but by the change of vibration, by recreation, by amusement. And another thing that may happen as the very, very high vibrations affect us is this inferiority complex, you know. This sense of profound depression, and as he describes it, and he's not one to exaggerate, an utter sinking of the heart as the future is faced. But he tells us, face that future, however, and remember that what the future holds is not revealed, but the joy cometh in the morning. So we all have to pass through our own dark night of the soul, you know, the real dark nights are experienced well, at the fourth initiation, really, that's the dark night of the soul that descended upon the initiate Jesus when he realized fully in his soul the human condition. But around the second degree, there's another dark night, and I think we've all experienced the depression when we think of our own inadequacy in face of that which has to be done. The astral body becomes very sensitive, and we just have to deal with it somehow. And we're always getting closer to the goal. We may not realize it. So, frankly, a lot of faith is needed in this following of the occult path. We may think that we've outgrown the need for faith and aspiration, but it isn't so. You know, as a matter of fact, Master DK was especially strong on these particular qualities. We learn when we study something of his life earlier, when he was associated with Master Moria and Master Kutumi. So now that's just a little bridge, you know, and now we go on for a bit. I think what there is left to read in this particular section should take today and also next week on the 15th. Then we're getting very close to, we're getting close to the intake day on the solstice of the Moria Federation. So if any of you feels that you need a deep education in esotericism, which is modeled upon the esoteric curriculum given in Letters on Occult Meditation, of the preparatory schools, that is, that goes deep enough. We can't yet imitate the advanced schools, but we can aspire to bridge toward the appearing preparatory schools, and under the world is undergoing a preparation for that right now, a great purification. The fires are everywhere. This is a school that's going to be founded in California and also in the Midwest and in other countries, 14 of them eventually, 7 preparatory schools and 7 advanced schools eventually, and then every nation which has developed to a certain extent will have its own esoteric school following the founding of these 14. So it's a whole method of education coming into the Aquarian Age, and we in the Moria Federation, extension of the University of the Seven Rays, we are earnest and sincere and I think competent in offering a broad and deep curriculum in esotericism. And after all, in this age of the forerunner, we have only another 7 years or so to go before the plans of 2025 are laid, the plans which will see actually practically the very first steps in the process of the externalization of the hierarchy. So we have a lot on us, and we should somehow realize that the pressure is an inner pressure. It's not something that is going to be told to us from the outside. It's just getting the most out of ourselves at this time when so much help is needed. And DK is very encouraging along these lines, as we will see. So, well, I love the sound of the wind howling out there. It's really, if I'm suddenly cut off here, you'll know it was the elements, but it's not my intention to be cut off if possible. Anyway. So everything depends upon the pupil's ability to grasp the inner meaning of all events. Now, what is the world of meaning? The world of meaning is the world of the soul. The world of significance, the world of the triad, the world of being is the two higher planes of the monad and the logoic plane, and the world of ultimate causes is the logoic plane. So anyway, his entire progress upon the path rests upon his attitude in making the teaching his own. Now, we're all interested, you know, and hopefully for reasons which are related to service, to make progress upon the path. It's necessary, and it doesn't have to be a selfish thing. We want to equip ourselves. It's only as we transmute the lessons on the inner planes into practical knowledge that they become part of our own experience and on a longer theoretical. That's the wonderful thing about occultism. You get to prove it yourself. You know, you take the four books of Patanjali, the Yoga Sutras, and says, try this, work with this, prove it yourself if you can. And even the masters, we are told, study the third and fourth book of those Yoga Sutras, which does say something about the status of the sage Patanjali as he released these maybe more than 10,000 years ago. So practical knowledge is the key, and the ability to express everything we think we are learning on the inside. The old thing from theory to practice, obviously. Expansion of consciousness should be an ever-increasing practical experience. You know, if we're just, I always am amused by that old saying that, you know, where the finger feels like it's pointing at me, that even a donkey can carry a library on his back. So it hasn't benefited the donkey very much. So carrying on the back is the theory, and applying is something different. Theories are of no value until we have changed them into fact. Well, they point us in the right direction at least, but factuality is the essence of practical occultism. And hence the value, he says, of meditating on an ideal. You know, you do this in the heart, the master in the heart meditation. You see your master, or you see the ideal you or some ideal, and you get the soul influence through the heart center. In the meditation, our thoughts vibrate temporarily to the measure of the conception, and in time that vibration becomes permanent. We always have to revisit, redo, until we stabilize the vibration. We're always building ourselves, you know, and surely that's the case until the destruction of the causal body at the fourth initiation, and of course beyond. But our present curriculum deals with the work of preparing the causal body in total fullness so that the Temple of Solomon can be justifiably destroyed. But we grow and we grow and we grow after that in many, many, many ways. So, but first things first, even right now, and in all we do, we are building in the qualities of the causal body, and basically we're working on the sacrifice petals, and we're, you know, as we do that, the synthesis petals are slowly opening. Synthesis of knowledge, of love, and of will. And something higher than our personal self is really coming into the picture. So, right, okay. So now this is very interesting because it speaks to every one of us. We are those who are submitting ourselves to occult training. And Master DK is a great trainer. One of the things about his ashram is he trains aspirants for initiation. Those who with open eyes enter on occult training need indeed to count the cost. Well, you know, we could ponder on that. This is something that we have done or have not done, or have done partially or not done completely, or maybe a few completely. What is the cost? Those who with open eyes enter on occult training, and I trust that that is a number of us. Certainly, if you were to work with the University of Seven Rays or Moria Federation, you would be entering in a very decided way upon occult training. Not never easy, you know, the personality is always going to throw things up and say, well, this is your, you know, this is a problem, and so do I quit or do I persist? Need indeed to count the cost. The reward at the end is great, but the path is rough. And the true occultist walks it alone. Now, this is a tough one, you know. The true occultist walks that path alone. I wonder if we realize in our moments of apparent loneliness what this is all about. You know, we're never, you know, if you look at the word alone and put a hyphen in there, it's all one. It's the appearance eventually of isolated unity at the fifth degree and shown to a certain extent at the third degree. But and that takes the place of loneliness. But the path is rough, and the true occultist walks it alone. So when we get into a program of study or development, we say, oh, this is wonderful, and how I'm going to grow. But we don't realize that our personality will be in our face, and all our glamours and illusions will be up for visibility, and we'll have to do something about them. That's the tough part, and only the people who really get into it know that that is the case. The capacity to stand alone, to assume responsibility, and then carry all through single-handed. You know, that goes back to the Buddha when he says, rely upon yourself. And to brave evil, we don't use that formulation so much, but it's a verb, you know, not just an adjective. To brave evil for the sake of the good achieved is the mark of the white brother. Now, that would really be worth memorizing in your heart, because it represents the ideal towards which we are striving. The capacity to stand alone, to assume responsibility, and then to carry all through single-handed, and to brave evil, and it's there, for the sake of the good achieved, is the mark of the white brother. They, you know, those in high places, I told you what Master Moria said. He says you bother yourself about a few minor demons when the dagger of Satan is aimed at our back. So, those in Shambhala, they are really fighting the evil. Be prepared then for loneliness. Now, you know, is this very appealing to you, to me? I mean, you're about to enter a program where you say, oh, this is going to give so much growth and happiness and perspective, which it does, of course, but be prepared then for loneliness, for dangers of a dim and obscure character. And where is this ill coming from? Where is this problem arising from? Because the Black Lodge and the negative characters, they don't necessarily announce what they're doing to humanity and to you particularly, and expect to see your life spent for no reward that touches the personality. Now, this is demanding, isn't it? This is tough, because usually our human expectations are quite different from this. Be prepared for friendship. Be prepared to face all dangers and overcome them easily. Be prepared to have your personality life enhanced, and a lot of people will notice you and praise you and all the rest of it, you know. But it's exactly the opposite. Be prepared then for loneliness, for dangers of a dim and obscure character coming from God knows where, and expect to see your life spent for no reward that touches the personality. That's really going to separate the sheep from the goats right there. It is only as the consciousness expands and one finds one's true position in the cosmic whole that the reward becomes apparent. Okay, so we have to move on apace, always, in order for the reward of treading the path of occultism to make itself truly felt. But cease from fear. See, all of this, he's given us a big build-up for all of this, because he's shown the different fears to which we are subject, and he's given us the method by which to overcome these fears in certain exercises. And basically, he finally just says it, cease from fear. And then again, a tough statement. And know that the personality is only temporary. And what matter if it suffer? Huh. And know that the personality is only temporary. And what matter if it suffer? Well, this is the hierarchical point of view, but a lot of us would pause there and say, well, yeah, I don't want to suffer. You know, and yes, it does matter, and there must be a way to do this without this suffering. But anyway, this is the master's point of view. Then he says, you know, some beautiful things. This is so beautiful in my mind. Some good gained for the universal brotherhood. Some law explained and demonstrated in the life of every day, may make the master say eventually, yes, eventually, after all is over, not too soon, you know, well done. You know, there's always a danger in complimenting anyone too early, because then they cease from doing what they've been doing in a very positive way. So the sense of timing is really the important thing. Then the injunction, let your eyes therefore look straight on. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. The path leads upward and on to greater rapidity of vibration and to greater sensitiveness. And that's hard to bear for many people, maybe for everyone, once that sensitiveness really takes hold. Seek the point of balance in your work and keep that balance, for the years hold much work, much pressure, and much suffering. Now, is that a good invitation? You know, so often the exhortations, this is all great stuff. Also good. I think I can't even get as far as I had hoped to get, because it's so deep and it's so important. But when you're invited to join various organizations, they give you the incentive, and it's so often it touches on the enhancement of your own personal life. Well, of course, that personal life as a representation of the soul will be enhanced, no question about it, along the way. But they don't talk about the pressure and the suffering and the work. And Master DK, if anything, is honest. He's honest. He's Blavatsky referred to him as, I know a youth so pure, that was back in the Tibetan days, that no lie would ever cross his lips. So he's telling it as it is. And if we are horrified by this picture, you know, or something in us quakes and says, oh my goodness, how can I be involved in that? This is not what I was looking for. Then we just have to realize that there's a difference between what we want and what the masters say will ensue. Just a little more, perhaps. Are you strong enough to see the world's woe? We see a lot of it today, don't we? Really. You know, anybody who's tuned in on the news feeds that are legitimate just sees terrible suffering. Are you strong enough to see the world's woe, to see disaster, and yet keep joyful? Think about that for a minute. Are you strong enough to see the world's woe, to see disaster, and yet remain or keep joyful? Well, that's a good one to really ponder on. So don't just leave it behind now, but think about that. You know, if we're really attached to the outer world and developments in the outer world as if they were real, which the Buddha warns us against, then there will be no joy. But if we somehow know the divine plan and can see the evidences of that plan moving behind the suffering and the misfortune, and if we have confidence in the immortal God within, then the joy is a possibility. You know, in the Arcane School and in other places, he has the evening review on joy. It's about 30 questions. I think we should try to find that, and everybody should have it, because while happiness is of the personality, joy is of the soul. So it's a measure of the extent to which we have managed to really be in the soul consciousness. The depression, yes, it comes and he warns us about it, but when we really make that transition into soul life, there's a certain joy that cannot be quelled. Can you be a partner in the world, in the work of furthering the evolution of the race, and see the necessity for the trouble and for discipline, and yet not move to stem the tide of sorrow? You know, this seems like an unusual question, because we want to stem the tide of sorrow, yes, but what are the causes and what's being learned? And we all know what happened with the premature compassion of our planetary logos in relation to the moon chain. A great retardation occurred because of his premature compassion. We also know that the Buddha, there's a so-called sin of the Buddha, which DK describes as very understandable, but he was so attached to the welfare of humanity that he stayed too long and chose a path which was not really his. And who knows, on the deeper levels, what that meant. But of course, that's being corrected, he says. And it's been, I don't know, 2,500 years or so since that kind of choice was made. So we need to see when premature compassion and rushing in with the Band-Aid and helping actually prevents the lesson from being learned. And that takes a lot of love and compassion and discrimination. Picked and tried souls are being trained all over the world at the present time. Now, you know, that can be who we are if we attend with caution and sincerity to the Tibetan's words and follow through. The masters are overwhelmed with the work, and their time is overoccupied. They give what they can, but on the individual aspirant depends the use made of what is given. I mean, you know, we think we have a burden, perhaps. We think we are hard-pressed. It's like, well, Master Moria says it, you know, and in this case, we're the donkey and not the camel. He says, don't put the load of a camel on a donkey, or you're going to get a very... you got to have the collapse of the donkey. So what the masters carry is, it's beyond what we can possibly conceive, as hard of us, as hard as it is for us. Now, here are some beautiful things, and I just don't want to rush things here for us. Basically, he's going to tell us how they observe our headaches, our diseases, our exhaustion, our whatever, you know, in the act of service. He's going to tell us that we're weak at the moment, but we can't really expect to be strong yet, such is the world karma, and that good health is not entirely ours the way it can be because of the world karma. We'll get into that. It's so, you know, this is what I call Master DK at his most encouraging. So, although I had anticipated, excuse me, that we would go farther, I don't want to do too much. I want us to be able to ponder on these things. He's going to talk about the attitude that the inner masters have when they see our attempted labors. And sometimes we feel so alone, so lonely, so abandoned. We look and say, well, even the masters have each other, you know, who do I have? And but all of that is in the veil of illusion, really. So the next time we get together, we'll deal with that, their perspective on us as we work and slave and try to bear ever greater burdens. You know, Master Moria is so wonderful there. He says, burden me still more as I enter the beautiful garden. Burden me still more. Well, he repeats that throughout his great teaching, and I wonder how many of us repeat that and mean it, you know. So we've got to really, you know, it's the Aquarian age, and Aquarius is the sign of burden bearing. You know, you carry it on your shoulder, not yet maybe on your head. Later, you carry it on your head with perfect balance under the law of service. But right now, we have the carrying of burdens, and Aquarius people are weightlifters in a certain respect. It'd be interesting to do a study on how many weightlifters in real life, so to speak, have a strong Aquarius. But the idea of hoisting things up above your head and carrying the burden, that's where we are. So I realize that these sentences, you know, drop all fear, do your job, be prepared for loneliness, don't worry, joy cometh in the morning. All of this, I wonder how encouraging it is to us, or how much it may make us shrink back because, you know, this is not what I expected. I expected scope for expression of my powers, as the planetary logos once said to the solar logos. But the good old solar logos, he turned his head the other way, and he seemed not to hear. So there's no escape for any of us. It's just a question of when we realize that there's no escape. We can spend a long time looking for a way out or a better way, but there is no escape from this way of the lonely ones who are treading the path into all oneness and into isolated unity, but they don't realize it yet. There's no escape yet. Although the Antikorana is said to be the way of escape, but it's the way of justified escape once you're really serving and you know what you're doing. It's not a get me out of here kind of thing. It's once you're really serving, then you can access these higher powers without any deleterious effect. Okay, friends, so that's as far as I'm going to go right now. Always try to do about a half hour, you know, here in the beginning, and I almost always overestimate, or do I underestimate? I'm not quite sure, but I always have more than I can cover. So if any of you would like to write anything, say anything, whatever, this would be your moment to do so, and then we'll get into our, you know, this glamour of fear. He just says, overcome fear. Okay,
Yes.
we'll do that. Okay. All right, Brett, is that you?
Rebecca has a written comment.
Okay, let's take a look. Okay, I'll quit and come back in. Oh, well, you don't mean the path of occultism, do you? Okay, that's Ruby. Okay, wait a second. Anyway, Rebecca, this is why so few of us choose this particular path, but it has been said that it's the shortcut. Although it is said, you know, the Dalai Lama broke into tears when asked, you know, what's the fast way? And he said, well, there is no fast way. It relatively it is the fast way, and if you really want to go for it, Master Moria says that martyrdom is the fastest way, but I assume it's for a cause that is not selfish. So anyway, it's the shortcut because it's scaling the mountain of initiation, rock climbing, right? The cliff face instead of circumnavigating the mountain, you know, those you can go up slowly. Within the comfort zones, lifetime after lifetime. It's an uncomfortable path for the personality, right? But for whom? As you say, the personality. The soul does not care for comfort, not for the comfort of the personality. The soul loves hard work. This is interesting. The astrologers have an old saying, the personality may love trines, but the soul loves squares and oppositions, you know. The square and the opposition when you're looking at your chart is always something that really has to be worked out and cause a lot of trouble for the personality, but the soul loves them. And the personality likes trines because things go along in an easier way. So the soul does not care for comfort. The soul loves hard work, does it not? I guess so, Rebecca. I think so, yes. Power and courage to us all in making this attempt. Indeed, you know, we know what we're signing up for. And in case we forget, the Tibetan reminds us, doesn't he? So we need to remind ourselves that when the going gets rough, you know, the old saying, the tough get going, but when the going gets rough, it's just the inescapable part of the spiritual path at this time in human history, human karma. So the Tibetan has plenty of words of encouragement, and you will hear those words of encouragement coming up next week. I'm always inspired by them. It's well stated, and of course, maybe not all of us are good rock climbers. Sometimes I see what these people do with their pitons and how they go up the sheer face of the cliff, and I say, well, maybe another life. But again, there's internal rock climbing as well, having to do with the emotions and with the mind, and I think the external rock climbing is a great training for that. You know, first the outer, and it works itself inner and inner, and it's a great training. So thank you for your thoughts on this. We didn't sign up for comfort. You know, and there'll be some early mornings and late nights when we can remind ourselves that this is the case. Right. Okay, so thank you. And Frederick.
Michael?
Yes.
Frederick has his hand up as well.
Oh, does he? Okay. Let's just see what he's got here. Is this past related to energy and positive vibration? This part. Okay. Let's just see. So let's go to Frederick. And Frederick, did you want to speak?
Yes. Thank you for your great inspiration. Good morning. So I was thinking that all this metaphor you read and you expressed are maybe related to energy and how we have to vibrate in a positive way with the ecosystem and align with harmony with all around us.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And the internal ecosystem too.
Yes, because it's not only an experience, but energy vibration, because they are talking about vibration and point of balance.
Yes, the Libran thing, and absolutely.
And maybe angel, because our work cannot be completed without angel help.
Yes, and my wife, too, you would go in very much on that, as she's very much a student of the David cooperation, which is coming in stronger and stronger during the Aquarian age. So indeed, DK is not asking us to become unbalanced fanatics. Okay, he says that that's not good company for the hierarchy. So Libra, because it's an air sign age in Aquarius, Libra and Gemini will be strong as well. And we're told that Libra is growing powerfully in the planetary horoscope. And you see that all over the world now with this adjustment between the masculine energy and the feminine energy. The Master Moria says women are bringing in the new age. It's all part of the Libran response, part of the balanced response. So indeed, a fair measure of all things to make the life doable, even recreation, you know, all of that kind of thing is needed. And sometimes he advised his hardest working disciples, like Foster Bailey, he says, please take the time out for recreation, you know, take the time out to rebuild yourself in order to keep the balance. Because if you push it too hard, you'll just be sick, that's all. And you'll lose time otherwise. Just a second.
Thank you.
Thank you, Frederick. I just had to pause there to remind myself that if you push your heart too hard, you'll get sick. A few little coughs in time. But okay, look, you know, we all have a particular place in our environment. We have a particular people around us, when particular work, we can affect the environment in particular ways, it's up to each one of us to learn what the balance should be. DK was writing letters to his students, and he often advised them on that matter on some pretty practical things. At first he said, look, I'm not going to talk about your personal life. But I guess he saw that it was necessary as he went along. And then he would give them the kind of advice that would make their life more balanced, sustained, livable, and serviceable. So it takes a great deal of alertness to know what's out of balance in our life and how to correct that. And I think it's up to every one of us to do that. So thank you, Frederick, for those comments. And we will all be achieving the positive vibration. But the thing is, how not to respond to it too negatively at first, because it's so upsetting. You know, just like when a high disciple comes into your life, it ends up being upsetting. When a master intervenes, it ends up being upsetting of the usual status quo. We have to live through that and realize what causes it. So thank you. Okay, let's see now.
We have a written comment from Anne.
Yes, I see that. Thank you, Brett. So Anne, I was thinking when we meditate the master in the heart, our vibration intensifies, and that changes the vibration of the brain, helping it to make new synapses in the brain, and then understanding comes upon us on the physical plane. Yes, and why not? Basically, DK basically says this is a powerful meditation. At first, it looks very symbolic, but before you know it, you will actually be meeting the master, the real master, in your heart. So it doesn't remain on the symbolic level. And in order to do that, obviously, changes in the brain and in the energy system have to occur. Sometimes people are subjected to very serious training. Now, I'm recalling the case of Krishnamurti, where for several years, a few years, I don't know the exact amount, maybe read Philip Lindsay's book on the initiations of Krishnamurti. He was being keyed up for reception of the Christ energy and to be overshadowed by the Lord Maitreya, and it was an agony for him. You know, a great possibility, but he went through such torture in his physical mechanism, and I suppose in his energy body, getting him ready to receive these new things. So there will be definitely, in the kind of meditations we do, this keying up and actual physical changes as we go along. They're very definitely so. If we find ourselves overwhelmed, you know, by the kind of energies we access, we just have to take a deep breath and remind ourselves what we're doing, how long it takes, what the training process really is, that the path of occultism is a thorny path, and when we commit errors, they impinge upon us in a way that is much more painful than it would be for the average person who commits a similar error. Because we're very, very raw as we do this, and we have to somehow live with this. And we just have to realize what we've signed up for. And maybe a lot of us, maybe I point to myself, in our enthusiasm in the early days, maybe we didn't know what we had signed up for. Maybe we thought, onward and upward forever, without realizing that there would be the valley experience as well as the hilltop experience. And by the way, that comes in very much under the energy of Aquarius, the hill and valley experience, and the great exaltations and depressions, which for some people goes too far, becomes a bipolar situation, a manic depression, depressive situation. But as student occultists, we realize it's all part of the package, and we have faith that the inner changes in the brain and in the energy system are occurring as we follow the instructions with accuracy. Okay, Anne. What else, Brett? Anything else?
Not at the moment.
Okay, we're okay. And Let's see. Oh, here's Olivia. Hold on. Okay, go ahead, Olivia. Go ahead. Okay, you're unmuted, so let's see if I've unmuted you. And you should be unmuted if you wanted to speak, unless it's one of those things that just happens where the hand is raised. Well, something's going on with the sound, apparently. But at any time, just come in. And Duya, Frederick said something about balance with the day of a kingdom. Do you want to say anything about that? Or do you not?
Hello, and thank you. Well, when we think about whatever phenomenon, whatever we do, we will never be rid of the Deva kingdom. It's always we have to consider the building forces. And when we are forcing, in one sense, in that occult path, which is a forcing way, in a sense, because we are not using within us only that what is landing on our ways. We are stepping to work consciously with the hierarchy, and that is the forcing way. And then comes those higher. Frederick was talking about positive vibrations and higher vibrations. That is so that we call them higher elements functioning, and they are, can we say, paving the way? Is that correctly said? So there comes a different type of energy altogether, and that also starts to then affect the lower lives, which are the other ones are called in order. So we build a different kind of order. The other ones are going to be transformed, and then the other lives will chase away totally. So it's a in every single thing when we make our decision and when we call our will, and in the sense the higher love within us, we will force certain lives to change as well. And then there are those higher willing angels which are coming for our aid, and that is very often they are the angels of the Christ who are helping us in that sense, or from the other masters.
You know, the analogy there, dear. Now maybe turn your mute on. Yeah, the analogy there is that we are like little devas ourselves. You know, we are like elementals, depends on what kind of life we have. And when the planetary logos makes progress, or let's say even Shambhala makes progress, we are much affected. And the causal stream is coming from these high sources and is not worked up within us, just the way these little lives within our vehicles are much affected by the great stream of energy that we put upon them. So we're operating in respect of two streams. One comes from above and from the greater lives in whom we live and move and have our being, and the other is worked up within our own microcosmic system. And where these two meet, you know, we have a real flashing forth of the understanding. Okay. Let's see, Olivia, how are we doing here? I think you may be, I don't know what's happened here. There, can you speak yet, or is it a sound problem here? Because I you're unmuted from our angle, and just make sure you're unmuted from your angle, or if there's a sound problem, then we'll just have to hold it and offer it another time. We're going to stay with this particular section in White Magic. You know, as I review White Magic, the book, invaluable book. You know, that's why the Arcane School deals with it right away. You get in to Light on the Path for 6 months, and the next 2 years is spent studying a treatise on white magic. And even though there's so many parts of the book we cannot understand, yet, you know, there's so much that we can. And we can come out of the study of that book a much better disciple. So I cannot emphasize enough in our busy lives how we should study. Meditation, study, and service, right? You know, meditation goes without saying. Study, we sometimes say, well, when I have time for it. The service we seem to be involved in various ways, but study. Another 7 years to really assimilate what D.K. has given, or a certain proportion of it, and then we can do the work of receiving the new dispensation. Okay, so any luck here?
Michael?
Yes.
Olivia has a written comment.
Okay, all right, then we'll have to do it that way, and that'll be good. Yes, these, and we're going to meditate on that, Olivia, tomorrow, the fires, you know. And, you know, because we have our emergency work that we do every Saturday. So Saturday, same time, you know, horrific, really. Southern California is having the challenges of wildfires. And some of our coworkers are impacted, indeed. Meditation Mount has lost a building. I was asking about that, and I was wondering, I knew there was damage. And damage to the grounds, and it may be more. Justin's, Wilkinson's parents, Bree and Francis, have had to evacuate their home near San Diego because of the fire. So maybe we can send out some good energy here to all there. Indeed we can, and we'll specifically be working on that tomorrow, because in this business of invoking the soul of nations, we realize that all of these catastrophes are part of clearing the way to fuller soul expression. So that's sure to be part of our focus on the next morning. And, you know, just for the moment, you just think of those pictures that have been shown and, well, people losing everything, you know. It's real devastation. I remember I was with a friend once, and we were listening to some very intense Tibetan music, and this friend said, I feel like I'm burning. Well, we got back to my house. It was after midnight, and he had, you know, he was staying with us overnight, and there was a call. He put in a call and discovered that his whole homestead had gone up in flames with maybe $50,000 in cash inside, you know, from their business and so forth. So, and this was under a Pluto transit. And I have experienced that too, under Pluto, a considerable loss through fire. So these things, terrible as they are in immediacy, they cause us to be reborn in some way that we did not expect. But let's just send our blessings and our hope and the sound of fire retardation, which will be in the expert care of the fire services in the future. He tells us fire will be controlled by sound. We don't know what those things are, but the Om, well-intended and with the proper visualization, is sure to help. So thank you for that reminder. Yes, hold on. Maybe Tuya has something to say here. Yeah, Tuya, go ahead.
Yes, about this fire, there is something that we cannot avoid, because this is the era of the world of the Lord Agni. And it is already told by that now the purification will come by the fire. But how we are controlling these fires is when we think about the mental plane and all our sounding, Michael was already pointing out about the sound, that how much our mind is occupied about these selfish thoughts. And when we think about California, which is one of the world centers in that sense, which is the most artificial, all kinds of artificial things going on, how we concentrate upon our physical, like all these surgeries that people are doing, concentrating to like eternal youth on the physical sense, all that is echoing. And this purification must happen on that level as well. So I think these huge fires which are going through now in several places, please study the people, how their like everyday life is concerned about, what kinds of things are moving in their minds. And that will tell you a lot why these fires are appearing in certain places. Then there are those places which are very like sacred places, and you see that the fire is appearing there. And maybe that is then the work of the Lord Agni, which is considering or stretching his work to the global level. But these fires, which does not seem to cease in California, that has been going now some years already. So we have to really put our occult minds together and to try to help this process, but we cannot avoid it. It will come, and these fires will manifest in the future even more.
Yeah, I want to just say that DK tells us that the attempt will be made to destroy the Aryan race by fire. Now, what exactly that means, you know, we don't know enough to know exactly what it means. Is it atomic fire? Is it bombs? Is it fire let loose across the world, as there are many incendiary people that want to burn down everything that belongs to someone else? But we have to find the way to bring out so much solar fire in our own lives that the fire by friction that is raging with these elemental lives, what are they called again? The fire elementals. There's a name, you know, and I'm forgetting it. Salamanders, that's right. Okay, the salamanders, yeah. Okay, so the release of these fire by friction devas have to be controlled by the solar devas of the Om, the solar fire devas. And that's where we come into the picture, pouring that into these situations. Solar fire at this time is always the solution. Well, we have our work cut out for us, everybody, definitely. So I think, you know, now it will be time to do our meditation. And I thank you for your thoughts, everybody. You know, there is so much to study and apply to the problem of glamour and illusion. So we'll stay with it, and in the process we'll probably study quite a few sections from Master DK's various books. But anyway, let's go on. It's still the glamour of fear. So there are some 30-something of us here, and we regather in the strengthening silence. And we will use this very necessary protective formula, which involves the cross of divinity, the forehead, the chest, and the two eyes. And we will make this cross, visualizing it illumined, as we say this mantra, which affirms where we stand. As a soul, I work in light, and darkness cannot touch me. I take my stand within the light. I work, and from that point, I never move. And see that cross illumined, that protective cross for yourself individually and for the group. Then we will bring three lights together. First of all, we will focus the dual light of matter and of mind, and we'll draw up the light of matter, focusing it on the mental plane and the light of mind on the mental plane. So we have the vitality of matter supporting all of our efforts, and we have the power to think, to reason, to understand. And these two lights are together. Probably within our mental body, attuned to the plane of lower mind. And then we reach in meditation to the level where soul contact becomes possible. And we take a moment to recognize this higher light from the higher mental plane, soul light. And we bring that soul light down, as it were, into the lower mental vehicle where the other two lights are fusing. And three lights, soul light, mental light, the light of matter, they are fusing together. And this is for the individual and also, in a larger sense, for the group. The vital matter, the mind of the group, and the soul of the group, all fusing together. And then we will say the confirming mantra of this process, followed by the sacred word. The light is one, and in that light, shall we see light. This is the light that turns the darkness into day. So within ourselves and within the group, we have a triple light as one. And then we use the formula, and as we're using this formula, we visualize a great searchlight being turned upon the astral plane. So the triple light becomes the searchlight as we mediate between heaven and earth. Radiance and are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out, linking the heavens and the earth. The inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. We reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. Thus, with the light, we work and turn the darkness into day. And we visualize that beam that is created from our triple light extending in our imagination out into the astral plane. It's the light of day. It's a scorpionic light. It's the power that deals with glamour so effectively, especially as Scorpio leads to the second initiation. And then to strengthen our beam, we invoke the spiritual will. We know its origin, well, for us at least, the monad, the atmic plane, the jewel and the lotus, you know, aspects of the soul, but we invoke the spiritual will to strengthen our beam, which is our weapon for dissipation, clearing the astral plane of the debris and the veils and the dark clouds and miasmas. So we need a strong beam and we say, visualizing it as we go, with power upon its beam, the light is focused on the goal. With power upon its beam, The light is focused on the goal. Now, our glamour, this greatest of all glamours, at least for humanity and upon this planet, the glamour of fear, we're going to throw our light upon it, visualizing the pushing back, the dissipation, the vitiation, we might say, devitalization of those energies which, though built into our nature, are causing an unnecessary fear, which is not desirable in the really effective disciple. So, these are words of power, and here we go. Visualizing the weakening, the dissipation, the penetration of the glamour of fear, which holds so many back from their possibilities. The power of our united light prevents the appearance of the glamour of fear. It's not even allowed to emerge. Back. It's driven. The power of our united light negates the quality of the glamour of fear from affecting humanity. The power of our united light destroys the life behind the glamour. And what we're going to do in the silence, 5 minutes of silence and intensity of purpose, where we see this work proceeding, and we can use the words of power to see this work proceeding. As we prevent the appearance of the glamour, negate the quality of the glamour, destroy the life behind the glamour. 5 minutes of intense silence. We have this beam. We can remember it from time to time as we deal with our own individual glamours, but always aligned with the group and its strength and the hierarchy and its protection. Always use that protective formula. Because protection is needed. Then we withdraw our beam from the astral plane and focus it upon the plane of mind and turn for the moment our searchlights off. And we know that work has been done. We have the faith that some little bit of work has been done, and it will affect our own individual lives too, in the overcoming of glamours which are so often unsuspected. So let us sound the Om individually and together, seeing, believing that work has been done on all three levels of the personality, but especially that of the astral plane. Tomorrow, we'll be dealing with the fires and the soul energy, which will help us and help everybody bring these fires into submission. We don't have, of course, the exact magical words that Master DK predicts from the future, but it is solar fire, which overcomes the raging fires by friction. And we have to help interiorly. So our Saturday meditation is one when we deal with planetary emergencies and also invoking the soul of nations in that task. Thank you very much for attending. Tomorrow you'll just use your Ask Comprehensive for the broadcast. Your Ask Comprehensive link, you all should have that. And if not, write to Brett or to me, and we will work in this emergency interior work together. Meanwhile, thank you for attending this Dissipation of Glamour initiative, which pretty much is operating on a weekly basis, except when travels make it impossible. And we'll be seeing you tomorrow, we hope. Many blessings from Olivia, Tuya, and myself, and from our staff, which is loyally standing behind us here, Joe and Brett and BL. All the best, and let's move forward together in our subjective work, strengthening it and making it more effective always. Bye-bye.